Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
This is Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host Frank Santopadre. Like Robert Quarry in The Return of Count Yorga, our guest this week is also returning for a second time. He's an actor, voice artist, a producer, podcaster, and author, a film historian, an Emmy-winning comedy writer, and one of the best and most admired stand-up comics of his generation. You've seen him in films like Mystery Men, My Fellow Americans, Father's Day, Dumb and Dumberer, When Harry Met Lloyd, The Aristocrats. That rings a bell. As well as on popular TV shows like Seinfeld, The King of Queens, The Daily Show, Conan, Family Guy, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Anger Management, I'm Dying Up Here, and Stand vs. Evil, which he also produced and created. He's written a graphic novel, Planet of the Apes, Visionaries, and for numerous television specials, and including critically adored The Ben Stiller Show, Parks and Recreation, The Simpsons, for which he was awarded 2 Primetime Emmys, and starred in his own stand-up comedy specials, Dana Gould, Let Me Put My Thoughts in You, and Dana Gould, I Know It's Wrong. He's also the host of an essential monthly pop culture podcast called the Dana Gould Hour, and is currently writing, hosting, and starring in the internet talk show Sensation, Hanging with Dr. Z. In fact, a brand new episode just dropped this week. Frank and I are happy to welcome back one of the funniest and most knowledgeable people we know. A performer who's played everyone from Newt Gingrich to Wilford Brimley and worked with everyone from Bob Hope to Bobcat Goldthwait, and a man who once penned a Simpsons episode under the name Lawrence Talbot. The man of 1,000 obsessions, Dana Gould.
Hearing all that, how am I broke? How is it possible?
Welcome, Dana.
How is it that I'm selling cameras? What happened?
I'm wearing a cardboard belt.
I'm wearing a barrel. A barrel and suspenders. Good Christ. Hi, Gilbert.
Welcome back, my friend.
Nice to see you guys.
Now you wanted to talk about Dwight Fries, so we better start right away.
Anybody who dies on a bus, I want to talk about.
So did he die on a bus or walking down the street? I heard walking down the street.
On a bus.
I heard he was on his way to work. He worked at an aircraft plant, and he had a massive heart attack. He was working at an aircraft plant. He was getting ready to play the Secretary of Defense in the Woodrow Wilson biopic that was then gearing up. That was big talk, and it was going to be a big job. He hadn't had one in a while, and he was excited about it, but he was still working at an aircraft plant, and he suffered a massive coronary on the bus to work, from what I understand.
If Joe Dante says he died on a bus, he died on a bus.
Yeah. Don't talk to him. I'm not going to get.
Not going to question it.
And I heard in the obituary, they said Dwight Fry, tool designer.
Yes, that's what he put as his job. He was working at an aircraft factory, working on constructing aircraft for World War II. And that was his job in the factory. And that's what he put. He was a very self-effacing, kind of modest guy.
And on Broadway or wherever, he was like actually a song and dance man.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was. And we were talking about this before. in both Dracula and Frankenstein, which are they're great, but they're very mannered film. You know, there is that 30s sort of theatrical, yes. Hey, Henry, don't tell me I'm leaving Henry. But he gives very modern performances.
Yes.
Like Renfield is a very modern performance. And like when Carl, which is the name of the character in Frankenstein, people assume it's Igor because it's become Igor, but the character's name was Carl. When he stops to pull up his socks going up the stairs, like there's a lot of really funny, small, real behavioral moments that no one else in those movies are doing.
And it's funny. It's always in, when you talk Frankenstein, they always say, oh, and his hunchback assistant Igor. And it was like Carl or which one was Carl and which one was Fritz? Was it Breitner?
No, you're right. I'm wrong. It was Fritz in Frankenstein, and then he played a character named Carl in The Bride of Frankenstein. He did different character. So good call on that. I was wrong.
And Lugosi was actually Igor.
Played Igor,
yeah,
in Son of Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And that's an, and you know, Lugosi, who gets a lot of crap as being a mannered actor, which I disagree with, he's great in that role.
Terrific
in that role.
Oh, yeah.
And Lugosi also looks like he's having fun.
Yes.
As Igor.
Which he doesn't in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman.
Horrible. And yeah, you know, Lugosi winds up only being on screen in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman for, I think, 6 minutes.
Yeah. And now have you, I know you've discussed his dialogue in that movie.
Yes.
By the way, these conversations is why this podcast should be called Operation Panty Drop.
we toyed with that title.
Here we go.
If you can't get pussy talking about Dwight Fry, then you're hopeless.
What about skeleton eggs? That's a panty dropper,
I'm going to throw down Bernard Jukes, and it's going to be like Bob Guccione in the 70s. But, you know, he had dialogue, and then they laughed at it in the preview. And so they cut it all because it was Frankenstein's monster, but he was doing Igor's voice, and they cut it all. But there are still scenes in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman where he's moving his lips.
Yes.
And you don't hear anything.
And the reason he's walking around, and what invented the Frankenstein walk, you know, when people do a Frankenstein walk, it's Lugosi and Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And what invented that was he was also supposed to be blind.
Right. He was blind from the end of Son of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And, Ghost of Frankenstein.
Ghost of Frankenstein. Oh, God, I'm so... Oh.
And because that's when he says, Frankenstein, you played on me a trick.
You know, Dana, we had Donnie Dunnigan on this show.
Wow. How old is he now?
Oh, in his 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was terrific.
Terrific. He's plug and play. Ask him one question. You got a 40-minute podcast.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah, he's great. And we had Janet Ann Gallo, too, who passed away last year.
She was from Ghost of.
Ghost of, yeah.
You know, you talked about my storied career a year ago before. So it was 2019. I had the very great pleasure of spending a lot of time with Mel Brooks. We worked on a project together that shall remain nameless, but may happen.
Oh, good.
And
hope it does.
But he was talking about making a young Frankenstein, and he was like, you know, so I call Kenneth Strickfaden is this, I call him up and I said, well, you know, could you recreate this Dr. Frankenstein set? He goes, it's at my garage. I don't have to recreate it. We drove to Venice and it's in his garage. We took it out of the garage, put it in the car, and 2 days later it was set up.
It's a great story.
And I told him, I told him, Greg Nicotero, who is the exec producer of The Walking Dead and, you know, is a big monster guy. He's the, if you ever see KNB effects, as especially, he's the N in KNB effects, big nerd guy, one of us. And he owns the operating table from Young Frankenstein that he bought at a show. And I said to Mel, I go, now, Mel, my friend Greg owns the operating table from Young Frankenstein. And Mel just goes, why? and he signed it. And I think he signed the picture of, what's, Greg, what is wrong with you, Mel?
And, you know, it's funny, and talking about the mechanics, you know, Stritfaden's inventions. Number one, there's nothing there that really makes any sense.
It's a lot of Tesla coils.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds great, and it lights up and spins around. Nothing does anything, and it's all powered by lightning.
Yes, I mean, it doesn't work without a kite. And what
state
if,
of the art.
You know, if the lightning didn't hit the kite, but all right, same time, everybody be back tomorrow. Come up with three new ideas tomorrow.
Oh, and in Bride of Frankenstein, I think it is. I mean, there are no light bulbs or anything like that, but Dwight Fry has a walkie-talkie.
he's got like the World War II combat phone.
Or like Zach from Saved by the Bell.
Here's a direction that was not heard on The Bride of Frankenstein with Ernest Thesinger. You want to try one big? Just try one big, see how it goes.
But for all the flaws of Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman,
when I was a kid, though, it was my favorite movie.
I was going to say,
that one
holds a soft spot in your heart.
Yeah, it doesn't. It gives you everything.
Yep.
It's exactly what it promised. And it's a really weird movie. I've talked about this before. The heroes, what's motivating the hero of Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman is he's trying to find a way to kill himself.
Yeah.
He just wants to die. And it's like, I'm like 10 years old. Like, that's the guy I wanted to be. I wanted to grow up to be like, yeah. Can't you let me die?
There's a part in a movie where they say, he's crazy. And Maria Spinskaya says, he is not crazy. He simply wants to die.
He's basically a comic.
This is sort of part of your childhood, Dana. You didn't really set out to be a comic. I heard you in an interview, I think it was with Joe Dante, saying you wanted to be like Peter Cushing, or you wanted to be Dwight Fry.
I wanted to be Dwight Fry. I just wanted to act in horror movies. That's all I wanted to do. And I didn't want to like act in anything. I didn't want to be on Big Valley. I didn't want to be on, you know, Medical Center. I wanted to just act in horror movies. I wanted to live in that world. And then I thought literally like, well, I'll become, and then it was acting and, you know, just high school plays and being funny. And I thought, well, I'll just become a famous comedian and actor, and I'll become so famous that I'll write my own movies, and I'll be so famous they'll have to let me do them. And it was one of those, it was like the hardest way of becoming a writer. It was like, yes, I want to be a chef, and if I'm elected to the Senate, they'll have to let me bake. You know,
and to me, the weakest part of Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman is the actual fight between the two of them. That's
it's 2 seconds long.
Clumsiest.
It's 2 seconds long, and then water comes in.
Yeah, yes, which is so idiotic that's the brainstorm. Oh, it was Valdik was the guy's name.
Yes, wow.
And he says, Valdik said he would explode the dam. And it's such an idiotic idea, because wouldn't you kill everyone in the village?
Yeah, and also, who puts the castle? Where should we build a castle? Right in front of the dam. Seems like a good idea. There wasn't a lot of zoning in Carpathia. But one thing I love about in the title, Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. Like, I like that it doesn't presume they're gonna fight. It's like, let's have them meet.
Yes, just over a cup of coffee.
Yeah. The original Frankenstein and the Wolfman drinks. We're just gonna see what happens. Yeah.
Frankenstein the Wolfman at Starbucks.
The other great, you talk about the fact that none of the mechanics work in Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, which is so true. And one of my other favorite movies of that genre in King Kong versus Godzilla, which, you know, the remake of King Kong versus Godzilla is the biggest movie of the year, which is insane to me. It's insane to me. But in the original one, it has that great thing where they go like, well, Godzilla is a reptile and is harmed by electricity. Kong is a mammal, and electricity makes him stronger. What? Because they had to find him, because he gets struck by lightning, and then he's strong enough to beat up Godzilla. You can't just make up physics.
And then there was that King, another Japanese movie where it was a robot, King Kong.
Yeah, King Kong escapes. King Kong escapes. Yeah.
And you think Mecha about Kong. It and you go, they're creating a giant robot. Why does it have to look like King Kong?
Wasn't there a mechanical Godzilla too, Dana? Mecha Godzilla.
Yeah, Mecha Godzilla. Mecha Godzilla is in the sequel of it. Well, is in the remake that's coming out in the summer. I can't believe those things happen, and you are outside your body a little bit. Like, one of a movie that I loved, I thought it was great, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I was watching it, and I was like, this is a remake of Battle for the Planet of the Apes that cost $100 million, which is about $100 million more than Battle for the Planet of the Apes cost. And it was fantastic, but it was like, this is a remake of a Saturday matinee programmer. You know, it's like, when is the multi-million dollar Hold That Ghost coming out with Brad Pitt and George Clooney?
Yeah.
And also Edward G. Robinson was being considered for the part of Dr. Zaius.
Yes, he did the makeup test, but I have to do it as Charlton Heston from the document, but Eddie had a bad ticker, and he didn't think he could survive under all that makeup.
Nicely done.
Eddie had a bum ticker. That's
Battle is the one with Paul Williams, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the one with Paul. It's awful, but beautifully awful.
And
but
then
beautiful.
When they did Soylent Green, mm-hmm. you know, they said like
he came back.
Yeah, Charlton Heston and Edward G. Robinson were friends.
Yeah.
And so that speech that Edward G. Robinson gives, they said Charlton Heston was actually crying.
Because it was his last scene that he shot in his life.
Wow.
Yeah, I believe that completely. You know, I did Politically Incorrect, the first Bill Maher show, mm-hmm. with Heston. And, you know, we disagreed on politics, obviously. He couldn't have been a nicer person. And at one point, like, he said something and I disagreed with him and I said it in a way that was funny and they went right to commercial. So it looked like I shut him down. I didn't really. I got lucky. And he leans forward and like puts his hand and I'm like, no, 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 this can't. And I thought he was going to rip me a new one. And he just went, so you're an actor. Things are going well. Obviously, you're here, and that's good. And then we chatted. End of commercial. This hippie doesn't know what he's talking about. Blah blah blah. End of commercial. You know, look, I remember once. You know, he sent me a photo from Planet of the Apes because we talked about it later. He was really old school in that way. Like that old. You know, your fans are your boss. And he can't say enough good about
it. That's nice.
And I heard somebody told me they were going to Charlton Heston's house or hotel room. I think his house. And, you know, on a business thing, either to interview him or deliver something to him.
I know this story.
Yes. And the door opens up and it's obviously there's a party going on. There's this company there. And Charlton Heston comes to the door with like a milk mustache and a glass of milk. And he looks at the guy and goes, "Milk and cookies?"
I don't know that story. That's amazing.
Milk and cookies? Damn.
You also met Roddy, and you have a Roddy connection, as long as we're talking about Planet of the Apes cast.
I have a weird Roddy connection. And somebody sent me today, there's a TV show where Roddy and Vincent Price get in a fist fight.
Oh, my
God.
And I have to send you the photos.
I must find that.
I have it here, but I need to play with my phone that I'm recording. But, when I was married, my wife and I were looking at houses because we were getting ready to start our family, and we knew we'd need a bigger house than where we lived. And we were looking in this house, and it was great. It was a little out of our price range, but it was great. And then the guy goes like, "Well, yeah, there's a famous actor used to live here. Who was it? Roddy McDowell used to live here." And I could feel my wife's eyes boring into the back of my head. and we bought the house. My ex-wife and children still live in it.
We
get old Social Security office mail.
It's great. I love it.
And when Roddy was ill, and knew he was, his time was short, he, had everybody that he was friends with over the house, and he would give them stuff. Like Dominic Dunn, here's a Planet of the Apes trash can. Dominic, thank you for being my friend. And when we moved into the house, and Roddy famously had parties that were benefits for the Screen Actors Guild retirement home. And so we continued that tradition in the house, and we would have these parties, and people would bring this stuff back and go, "Here, this really should be in the house."
Oh,
and
so,
like we started to get all of this, like, we have another Planet of the Apes trash can. Let's put it over here.
Life is weird. Your favorite movie as a kid.
And you
get to move into Roddy McDowell's house.
Very true. And as I met Roddy's sister, who at the time lived in the Screen Actors Guild retirement home. And I said, "You know, I live in the house. If you ever want to come by and see it," famously Elizabeth Taylor planted his rose bushes and they're mm-hmm. still there. So I said, "If you ever want to come by and see the rose bushes, or, you know, the house is open to you whenever you want." And she just looked at me and went, "Well, that would be weird." Sure.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's amazing colossal podcast, but first a word from our sponsor. I once had a friend who spoke to Roddy McDowell, and he said when he was a child, he was doing a movie over at Disney, and he got word that his mother had died. So he was old enough to drive or whatever, and he got in his car and was going to rush home. And at the door, the security says, "Mr. McDowell, Walt Disney wants to speak to you." And he was touched, thinking he cares about him. And he says hello, and Disney says, "Look, I'm sorry about your mother, but we're really running behind schedule here."
Oh, my God.
And Roddy McDowell said about Disney, he goes, "He was a very cruel man and a terrible anti-Semite."
Oh, that's gold.
That's fantastic.
Oh, where do you come up with this stuff?
He did have these famous parties at the house, and he would invite, like, mix and match people. And it would be like, you know, "Fred Grandy from The Love Boat, Gregory Peck, you both play Mahjong." And then
Wait, yeah, he was a connector.
Yeah, he was a connector. And I later met him before, when he still lived in his house and I hadn't bought it yet. I met him and I said, "You know what movie I love that you're in is the Cool Ones," which is a if you can't beat him, join him, 60s hippie comedy, where he basically plays Phil Spector, a pre-murderous Phil Spector. And when I told him that, he made the sign of the cross like I was a vampire, because it's like a famously so bad it's good movie. And then he caught himself and he took it down. And he goes, actually, that's a very good film. And I'm still friends with the director. We send postcards all the time. It's like he would not say anything. He wouldn't say anything shitty about anybody.
Can you talk a little bit about that picture that you and Roddy took together?
Oh, well, that was at my friend Brian bought the 9-foot tall statue of the Lawgiver from Planet of the Apes. And he bought it at the Sammy Davis Jr. estate sale.
Don't you love that, Gil? Sammy Davis owned a giant Lawgiver statue from Planet of the Apes.
And when we first heard about that, we assumed it was a horrible joke from Frank Sinatra, was what we all just assumed it was. But it turned out to be Arthur P. Jacobs, who produced the movie, was friends with Sammy, and Sammy said, I love the movie. And when it was done, he was like, send that to Sammy. Yeah, give it to Sammy.
I love it.
And is it true that Sammy had like no money when he died?
Yeah, supposedly Altoviz was like roaming around upstate New York, like looking for a place to stay. I think it was Altoviz that really had the rough go of it. Yeah, all of those guys, it's like, yeah, how do you... Well, he did a lot of, I know he put a lot of money into recreational pharmaceuticals.
Yes. they say Sammy denied himself nothing.
Yeah. Down hanging out with Anton LaVey at the Ambassador Hotel.
One time I think I was in, I was in Vegas and they had a driver for me and the driver said he once drove, Jerry Lewis and Sammy Davis Jr. And they were both coked out of their heads. And they wanted to stop in a supermarket because every place in Vegas has slot machines. Yeah. So they went in the supermarket and there was a coked out Jerry Lewis and Sammy Davis playing the slot machines.
Wow.
Oh my God.
In the local Bohack.
I mean, God, what wouldn't you give to have seen that?
just three very dilated pupils.
Yes.
Dana, talk a little bit about how your obsession with Planet of the Apes has fueled your current role.
Oh, it's so bizarre.
As the host of the hit talk show, hanging with Dr. Z.
Yeah. Years ago... when I was a writer on the Ben Stiller show, I had this idea to do a bit. It was a commercial for like when a play comes to your town, they do the commercial like, it's Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady coming to Detroit Playhouse for 2 weeks only. And they, so it was that, and it was Dr. Zaius is Hal Holbrook as Mark Twain. And it was Dr. Zaius and,
when I was a boy, I wanted to be a steamboat captain.
And I only wrote it because I wanted to do it. I wanted to get the makeup on and do it. That's the only reason I wrote it. And we got canceled before we got a chance to do it. And then literally like 14 years later, John Hodgman was talking about, he'd found a photo of the Maurice Evans reading a biography of Mark Twain on the set of the movie, which I didn't even know existed. And he was doing some internet competition of, can we have, and I said, I wrote that sketch like 15 years ago. I wrote that sketch. And he said, well, would you want to do it at my show up in San Francisco at Sketchfest? And I was about to say, like, no, I can't do that. And then I was like, well, wait a minute. Greg Nicotero from KNBFX is one of my best friends. I get a little bit of money I could spend. And I was like, well, hang on a minute. Let me call you right back. So I called Greg Nicotero. Hey, Greg, Stan, is anybody over there that could do a movie quality Dr. Zaius makeup on me? in San Francisco. You know, I'll fly him up, put him up. Hang on a minute.
Hey, Ed, you want to go to San Francisco? Oh, okay.
Yeah, no problem. So I did it, and it's on YouTube. If you go, like, if you do like Dr. Zaius Mark Twain, you can see it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And and the makeup, it works, and it's funny because it's exactly what they did in the movie. It's precisely what Maurice Evans wore. And he comes out in the Mark Twain suit and he does the bit. And when you could feel the audience seeing that it wasn't just a cheap, crappy mask, that it really was the whole thing. And it was so surprising to them that it was just that great tsunami. And then I ended up doing it again. And then I did it like it was Dr. Zaius is William Shatner.
Love that
reciting one. Reciting 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And
that's on YouTube.
Yeah. And I just started doing this. And then it just started to evolve as a character as I would do it in these. And then I did it for Turner Classic Movies, introducing the movie Planet of the Apes or Fathom events. And Ben Mankiewicz had me on as Dr. Zaius. And I always do it with Andy Schoenberg, who's the makeup artist. And that was the first time that I just played him like Sammy. Like, he was an actor in a movie, but he did a bunch of other stuff. He goes, you know, before I did Planet of the Apes, I was at the Pasadena Playhouse doing With Six You Get Egg Roll with a very young Lindsay Wagner. And she's a delight right out of the gate. You know, and it just became this sort of like, the guy that I always remember is like Peter Lawford, like some guy in 1976 who's just knows everybody, goes everywhere, does everything. And we just started to play the character like he was just this, you know, he would tell these stories about like, it was 1979 and I was doing a little movie called Beyond the Poseidon Adventure. You're welcome. And I'm driving home and I'd taken a little something to stay awake. So I was at the corner of Vineland and Dilaudid, if you know what I'm saying. You know, just like old showbiz stories.
Yeah, with Mankiewicz, so, you're doing Tony Fields references.
Yeah, Tony Fields references. And then Rob Cohen, who was a writer on the Ben Stiller Show, and we've written a lot of stuff together, said, we should do that as a talk show. Just like, he's like a Dick Cavett kind of name-droppy talk show host. And so we did it, and we did it, you know, on lockdown. We did it like this. We did like Space Ghost. So it was COVID friendly and COVID safe. But it's, it's just Dr. Zaius hosting a talk show. And it's called Hanging. It's on YouTube, and it's called Hanging with Dr. Z. And
it's great.
And he's just, and it's all like that Dick Cavett. Like, I was in a scrimshaw class with Toady Fields, and she told me that you know, she just knows everybody. And it's not just old Hollywood. It's like, you know, I if I have one regret, it's introducing Phil Spector to the Ramones. That's my regret.
It is a little Peter Lawford.
It's very Zelig. It's just like.
Was it the first Planet of the Apes that had Claude Akins in it?
No, that was Battle. That was the last one.
That was Battle.
I mean, that's actually a joke in one of them where I'm talking to Bobcat Goldthwait. Like, I don't remember. It was either at Simon Oakland Fest or Claude Akins Fest. But you and I. That's the one where, yeah, Claude Akins plays a gorilla and he holds a pimento seed up and goes, ouch.
Oh, no. This entire podcast began because Gilbert and I would sit on the phone for hours discussing people like Simon Oakland.
Sure.
That was the birth of this show. Darren finally saying, there must be somebody interested in this stuff besides you two idiots.
It's so
and
true.
And we're still waiting to find that person.
We're still
Simon, Claude Akins is in, he's in two of my favorite movies. He's in Battle for the Planet of the Apes, and he's in the TV movie The Night Stalker, which is one of my favorite movies. He's the chief of police or the sheriff's deputy that hates Darren McGavin.
Isn't it James Gregory who has the part in the early Planet of the Apes?
He's in Beneath the Planet of the Apes, a part that was turned down by Orson Welles.
Wow.
And Beneath the Planet of the Apes, one of the weirdest movies of all time, right up there with Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman in terms of how far afield. At the end of the movie, it's two astronauts from the future and their cave girlfriend fighting telepathic radioactive mutants trying to get to a nuclear bomb
before a race
of talking apes do it.
With the late Gregory Sierra turns up in that.
That's right. Gregory Sierra and James Gregory, and the Barney Miller Beneath the Planet of the Apes connection.
I remember one time sitting in a lounge at the Friars Club, and Darren McGavin was there in a bathrobe. And he asked me,
if I could get
his TV remote to work. And I tried to, and I couldn't. And I felt so bad. I thought he was my chance, you know. I helped out Darren McGavin, but I couldn't get it to work.
I think you got to put Hanging at the Friars with Darren McGavin into Dr. Z.
Yeah.
Work that in.
Peter Billingsley, who was the child in A Christmas Story, who I know, speaks very, again, Darren McGavin's one of those guys everybody speaks really well of. Like, he was a regular, like, it was a job he knew about. And the weird thing that Peter Billingsley said about him was that he knew everything. He's like if a door wasn't opening, he would know how to fix it. hey, you gotta chuck that screw there and that door will swing out.
You told me that Darren McGavin story, Dana, where Dan Curtis was pitching a fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan Curtis, who produced The Night Stalker and The Night Strangler and Dark Shadows. And Winds of War and all those things, was a famous temper tantrum thrower. There's got to be a better way to say that. Was an asshole. I guess that's how you say it. And it was the last night of shooting The Night Strangler, the TV movie. And they had like three shots or four shots left. And it was late. And Dan Curtis just uncorked on some poor crew guy. Just, you know, lost his crap and just screamed at this guy who did nothing for no reason. Guy had no authority. Couldn't say anything in his own defense. And finally, McGavin just went, "All right, Dan, you got enough. I'm going home." Just left.
How about that, Gil? Walked off the set.
But then at the gate, they stopped him and said that Roddy McDowell's mother had died and that Walt Disney wanted to talk to him.
And out of nowhere, Darren McGavin said, "This is why I hate the Jews."
Oh, God.
Well, speaking of people in bathrooms, I remember... I don't remember where I was. It was me and it was at the Improv and Rodney was sitting, you know, in the LA Improv, right when you walk in the front door, the steps go up.
Yes.
Rodney was sitting on the steps, but he had on a robe. He had on pants and a robe. Like, I don't know what was happening.
You're lucky he had pants on. We heard.
I know. I've heard those stories.
We heard some other stories.
And was sitting there and and Bud's talking to him and I'm just kind of standing there and he drops like a book of matches or something and Bud goes to pick it up for him and goes, "I can get it. Jesus Christ, Jews." One, you are Jewish. Two, he's just picking it up.
Ginsburg, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite part of an unnecessary music scene, but I love it when it comes on, is the party of the new wines. Yeah. Come on and sing this song.
And then that weird, "For life is short. And death is long. It's also, it's Frankenstein meets the Wolfman. Not without a music scene. I know what this movie needs.
And it's the most unnecessary scene. But when it happens, I go, here's the far.
He looks forward to it.
Yeah.
Gilbert, I'm throwing some trivia at you. Aside from Paul Williams, two other podcast guests that we've had that have appeared in a Planet of the Apes movie.
Ooh.
And I only talk about the original five.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
He won't get it, so I'll tell him. Don Murray.
Oh.
Is in Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. And M. Emmett Walsh is in Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, he is in Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Yes, very good. And, which you called the best Love American Style episode of all
it
time.
It is. It's basically a. If the original Planet of the Apes is basically the best episode of the Twilight Zone, it's basically Twilight Zone the motion picture. It was written by Rod Serling. It's got the plot structure of a Twilight Zone. It's got a great twist at the end. It's got a. It's a beautiful giant Twilight Zone movie. Escape from the Planet of the Apes is Love American Style, except at the very end, because every Planet of the Apes movie ended. All the endings are dark. All the endings are bleak. Planet of the Apes ends with Charlton Heston discovering that he's on Earth the whole time, and the Earth was destroyed by nuclear war.
No spoilers, Dana.
Yeah. Beneath the Planet of the Apes ends. Beneath the Planet of the Apes ends, and it's a very interesting story how this happened, they blow up the world. Everyone's dead. Thanks for coming to the movies. So when it comes to Escape from the Planet of the Apes, like, how do we end it? I know. We'll shoot a baby. The end of Beneath the Planet of the Apes, they shoot a baby. Like, it's just... and then the mother of the baby throws the baby into the bay. It is the darkest thing I've ever seen.
It's dark.
That's a good movie. It's good, right? We'll just shoot the baby and then we'll get out of here before 5. It's great. and Conquest of the Planet of the Apes is really conquest of 2 blocks of the apes. Yeah. It's not really the whole planet.
And what did you think of the more current, you know, computerized Planet of the Apes?
The Tim Burton one I don't like at all. The new ones I thought were great. I thought it's a different thing, but they're well done. They're well written. They didn't insult my intelligence. It's not the old stuff, but it's, you can't do that again. I thought they were really great. I thought they were, for what they were, I thought they were pretty good.
Matt Reeves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought they were fine. They're well done.
Before we got on the air, we were talking about when Don Knotts was a big star in film. And it was really weird when I watched those films, because a lot of them look like the Andy Griffith Show. Mm-hmm.
With the especially, same talent, with the same people.
Yeah, especially the Ghost of Mr. Chicken.
Yeah.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
The one that's perplexing to me is the Love God. Because it's like...
That one was because his career was falling apart and we were getting into the hippie era.
Yeah.
And free love and sex and all that stuff. So this was their way of making him contemporary, to put him in this movie.
I just, like, the media, you know, there's two things they come, yeah, Don Knotts and fucking. We gotta get those together.
I don't think Don Knotts was Hyken's first choice for the Love God.
I don't know, but it's such a weird.
Yeah.
We were talking about Bobcat Goldthwait for my birthday gave me the one sheet for the Love God. I have it in the other room. It's very Casino Royale.
Yeah, I think Don Knotts is supposed to be like Bob Guccione.
Yeah, basically. He's Hugh Hefner. And I met Don. He came in to the Simpsons, and then... I met him. After he passed away, if you hear Don Knotts on The Simpsons, it's usually me.
Mm-hmm.
But then I met him at a celebrity autograph show. They used to have them here in LA at the Beverly Garland Holiday Inn. And I had my Ghost of Mr. Chicken window card. And I said, could you sign this? Do calm and murder go together? And he went, is that a line from the movie? I was like, yeah, it is. It is.
Oh. And then Karen, his daughter, told you some years later that
she... I used to do a bit on my first album about how much I love Don Knotts, and that his voice was so specific that he couldn't make obscene phone calls. I'm sure there were nights when he couldn't sleep. He's up in a bathroom. I've been looking at you through the bedroom window. Is this Don Knotts? And so Karen Knotts comes up to me. She goes, I love that bit you do about my dad.
It's like, have you heard it? It's Gil, terrible.
Gil, what makes you say the movies are like the Andy Griffith Show? Because I watched Ghost and Mr. Chicken. It's written by two Andy Griffith writers, Fritzl and Greenbaum. It's right. directed by Alan Rafkin, who was a big Andy Griffith guy.
And Attaboy Luther was pitched by Andy.
Oh, he had something to do with that script,
yeah.
didn't he?
Yeah, he came. Yeah. Don let him read the script, and he was like, yeah, here's what I'd do.
It's a Barney character.
Yeah, it just seems like the movie crew would show up at the Mayberry set or whatever
yep.
and go, you, you're in the movie, and let's write it and make it exactly like the Andy Griffith Show.
It's like the Spanish Dracula in 31. Like, yeah. The Lugosi's crew comes in, the other crew comes in.
Yes.
The first two actors you encounter are Hal Smith, who played Otis the drunk.
Oh, plays Otis Campbell.
Doing a drunk character.
Yeah, he's playing Otis Campbell.
And Aunt Bee's bestie, Clara.
Right.
Are the first two actors that actually show up, and you really think you're...
Elmer Weems, you're dead.
Exactly. It's like you're watching an extended Andy Griffith.
And just like how in the Andy Griffith Show, he'd have his moment of pathos, in his movies, there'd be one scene where like, oh, this is the touching scene.
Where he's on the porch with him. But again, you get an average guy and an above average girl. And, average is really lucky to be on the same porch as above average.
There was that, I think it was called The Reluctant Astronaut.
Oh, yeah. That was a great one.
Yeah,
that was
good.
A great one.
It's good.
And Mr. Limpet is
excellent.
Oh, I like Mr. Limpet.
Yeah.
Jack Weston.
Reluctant.
Yeah, Jack
astronaut.
Weston is in there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
There's one scene where he's walking down the street and he gets grabbed by a bunch of guys to go into the bar and they force him to drink. And I'm going, okay, this is really weird why they would grab him off the street and force drinks down his throat. And it was there for no other reason than for Don Knotts to do his drunk act.
Okay.
Had nothing to do with the movie at all.
Well, they were vehicles. They were Don Knotts vehicles. You know that cast, Dana, which you talked about, Rita Shaw, Cliff Norton, Charles Lane,
Herbie
Fay,
Lane.
Gilbert, you know these actors. James Mulholland, Burt Mustin.
Burt Mustin's, yep.
Yeah.
It's spooky. It's eerie.
It's The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, starring three-time Emmy Award winner Don Knotts as the world's bravest coward.
I have been called brave. Now let me clarify this. As you see, I'm a lion with girls, a tiger with men, and I'm just naturally at home in a haunted house. So what's brave?
How should I know? I'm Chicken.
Mr. Chicken to you. In this motion picture, he starts as a roving reporter. Now he's a raving reporter, trying to solve a murder mystery in a house of terror. And he'll scare you silly. Don Knotts in The Ghost and Mr. Chicken in Technicolor.
And you're chicken if you miss this movie.
And Burt Muskin was one of those people that was born 100 years old.
And the other great thing about The Ghost of Mr. Chicken is it has never been remade. And I know of 17 different attempts. Like at one point, the Fat Boys were going to remake it.
Oh, really?
And it's like, remember when Whoopi Goldberg was going to remake A Face in the Crowd? You know, it's
just like, yes.
It's like whatever happened to kill these projects, it's so great that we never, you know.
Well, I think Gilbert and I are suckers, aren't we, Gilbert, for any good haunted house movie? Hold That Ghost is one of the best A&C movies. Did you ever see something called Murder, He Says, Dana, with Fred McMurray?
No.
You got to find it.
Murder, He Says.
With Marjorie Maine.
And really then good. When they were teaming up Don Knotts with Tim Conway.
Yeah, and the Apple Dumpling Gang stuff.
And the Private Eyes.
But that never worked for me.
No, I didn't see any chemistry there.
No, and it was just, it's Don is such a specific, he's asparagus. You know, it's like, It doesn't go with, it's just going to be asparagus. You can't put asparagus in a pie. It's this, if you like it and you serve it this way, it's great every time. Don't put it with anything else.
Oh, and he was once, Don Knotts was once on Hollywood Squares. And the host goes, okay, you have trouble sleeping at night. Are you a man or a woman? And he says, that's why I have trouble sleeping at night.
That is
he's great. Also, you ever see Pleasantville, Dana?
Yes, he's great. He's great in Pleasantville.
So fun to see him. What do you know about Frances Bavier being devoured by her cats?
I heard that she was the one, she was very hard to get along with, that she kind of felt, Frances Bavier was kind of felt she was above it. And I think it was the guy that played Commissioner Gordon.
Neil Hamilton. Yeah.
Also thought he was above it and didn't want to be there.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And say it's preservus. I swear I'm telling the truth. And I think that she was the one that was hard to get along with in the cast.
She was eaten by her cats.
But Gilbert likes to promote this bullshit story that she was devoured by her pets.
I hope so. Well, you know, and they go first
for
the eyes and then the tongue. That's where they go.
And I heard at one point when she moved away, when she moved out of Hollywood, I forget where she moved to, another state, and she wanted to escape from Hollywood. And there she was, the biggest star
in
the world.
Of course. If you want to escape from Hollywood, stay right here.
And one time, Andy and Ron Howard made a trip to visit her after she hadn't been on the show for a while. And she spoke to them through the, you know,
screen?
Fence in the door. She wouldn't invite them in. So Andy and Ron Howard are standing on the porch.
Now, Francis, you can open the door and let us in.
Do you guys want to try this Don Knotts thing that we prepared? Since Gilbert does a pretty serviceable Floyd the Barber.
All right.
Just a little something. What do you think, Gil?
Oh, okay. I'll try it.
We're going to call this, it's a wonderful.
We're going to do a sketch.
It's a wonderful fife. And Don is George Bailey, has been cast as George Bailey. And Howard McNear, also known as Floyd the Barber, has been cast as Mr. Potter. So take
it
away.
Right, and this is before the stroke, just so you know.
Yeah,
so,
it's pre-stroke.
Before he was sitting in his own barber chair. He's the barber. Why is he sitting in the barber chair? This makes absolutely no sense.
Try to do the pre-stroke, Floyd.
Yeah, please, it's pre-stroke, Floyd. You have to specify. By the way, the pre-stroke Floyd's one of the great bands of the early 80s.
Now I'm in trouble, Mr. Potter. I need help. Now, through some sort of an accident, my company's short on their accounts. The bank examiner got there today. I gotta raise $8,000 immediately.
That's what the reporters wanted to talk to you about.
The reporters?
Yes. They called me from your building and loan about an hour ago.
What?
And, there's a man over there from the DA's office, too. He was looking for you, too.
Oh, please help me, Mr. Potter. Help me, won't you, please? Can't you see what it means to my family? I'll pay any sort of bonus on the loan, any interest. Now, if you still want the building and loan.
George, could it possibly be there's a slight discrepancy in the books.
No, sir. There is nothing wrong with the books. I have misplaced $8,000. I can't find it anywhere.
Oh, yes. You misplaced $8,000.
Yes, sir.
Have you notified the police?
No, sir. I don't want the publicity. Harry's homecoming's tomorrow.
Oh, they're going to believe that one. What have you been doing, George? Playing the market with the company's money?
No, sir. I haven't.
Is it a woman then? You know, it's all over town. You've been giving money to Violet Vick.
What?
Not that it makes any difference to me. But why don't you go to Sam Wainwright and ask him for money?
Well, I can't get a hold of him. He's in Europe.
Well, what about all your other friends?
Well, I don't have that kind of money. Mr. Potter, you know that. You're the only one in town that can help me.
I've suddenly become quite important. All right, if I gave you a loan, what kind of security would I have in return? Got any stocks, bonds, real estate you can use for collateral of any kind?
Well, I have some life insurance. I have a $15,000 policy.
Oh, yes. How much equity?
Well, there's $500.
$500, and you asked me to lend you $8,000. Look at you crawling in here on your hands and knees with nothing but a miserable little $500 equity in an insurance policy. You're worth more dead than alive.
<That's> so bizarre.
Bravo, gentlemen.
They should have done this. Barney and Floyd should have done the Odd Couple.
It's not a spoon, it's a ladle.
Oh, my God. Gilbert, how long has it been since you did Floyd the Barber?
Now it's garbage.
Can I ask you a couple of questions from listeners?
You know, Nirvana has a song called Floyd the Barber.
Oh, yeah.
On their first album, Bleach. Yeah.
There you go. Dana, this is from Mark Skoback. Where does Dana rank the four? What did he think of the 1974 live action Planet of the Apes and the 1975 cartoon?
Oh, the TV series. I'm not a fan of the TV series. You know, it was just one of those things where it's like they didn't the money wasn't there. It was I just don't like it. It didn't really sing for me. And the cartoon was just
yeah.
Even as a kid with a cartoon, I was like, okay, enough. To use an expression you may not want to keep on the show, it was all fucked out.
We'll keep it. And Martin Bowe wants to know, what is you're a big Vincent Price fanatic, as we know. What does Dana think of the Dr. Goldfoot movies?
I fucking love Dr. Goldfoot movies. the fact that they, I mean, it's really my favorite kind of thing, and it not unlike the Love God or Casino Royale, like it's sort of like what Austin Powers was lovingly parodying, but that period from like 65 to 69, and when the people that weren't groovy were making fun of the people that were groovy, any guy over 40 in a Nehru jacket, you know, it didn't make sense. Uh-huh. But I love the fact that, you know, Vincent Price gets a manila envelope. Well, there's the new script. Let me open it up and see what I'll be doing next week. Rip. Dr. Goldfoot and the Bikini Bombs. Okay. Sounds good.
So we're going to actually stop right there and call this a part one with the funny Dana Gould, because frankly, we were all having too much fun and there was too much good stuff that we didn't want to cut out. and take away from you guys. So don't forget to check out Hanging with Dr. Z on YouTube or hangingwithdrz.com to check out Dana, and with hilarious support from the wonderful Chris Chapin. We will see you next week for a very funny part two that also includes the return of the requested price comparison skit that you guys loved so much the first time. And we will catch you next week with more of Dana Gould.